She was on Espinar, leading a survey team that had discovered and mapped an extensive cave system, in the depths of which the team had discovered caches of unique crystals formed from rainwater seeping through layers and layers of soil and rock, and sometimes sprouting like radiant teardrops on the tips of stalactites. The crystals turned out not to be kybers or even a class of kyber, but they bore enough similarity to the living crystal to interest the small community of scientists who had devoted themselves to their study. As either luck or fate had had it, Lyra was chosen to guide and provide logistics for the field team Galen assembled. She couldn't to this day say that it was love at first sight or anything close to that, though she did find him attractive and vital from the start. On Espinar, he would sleep until awakened or stay up until told to retire. He would allow himself to go hungry until provided with food or eat until someone advised him to stop. Sometimes Lyra couldn't get a word in edgewise, and at other times Galen wouldn't speak for days on end, preferring instead to seclude himself and write or sketch. He was continually organizing and reorganizing his equipment, and yet he struggled to keep his footing on steep grades. Sometimes when they spoke, she would feel as if she were conversing with a droid, though she came to appreciate the breadth of his knowledge and his facility for sustained attention. She began to recognize, too, that what she interpreted as hostility was actually a ploy that allowed him to maintain a safe distance from her while he sorted out what she wanted from him and solved the calculus of their relationship. The expedition lasted 6 local months, and by the end of it, they were lovers. She had made the first move, but he had gotten the hang of things very quickly. And all at once, she occupied the center of his world. She had blazed a path to his heart, and in so doing, had allowed Galen to realize that, in fact, he had one. In the years before the war, Lyra had been concerned that Galen would shift from pure science to military research, but in retrospect, she needn't have worried. When many of Galen's colleagues began to accept government handouts for positions, he instead took an offer from Zirpan Industries to continue his research into crystal synthesis and energy enrichment. The last time they had seen Orson was shortly before the departure for Volt, when they had informed him of Lyra's pregnancy. And now, all these months later, who would show up to rescue them but Galen's old school chum? Still, how could she not be grateful? How could she even allow herself to be suspicious of Orson's intentions, even if he had twisted Galen up inside by bringing him to Grange? He had risked a great deal for them, and if he hadn't come, well, could even a Jedi know the future? She listened for a moment more to the muffled conversation. Yes, Galen was tied up in knots. With her maternal instincts running strong, she had to resist an urge to intercede. After all, she wasn't Galen's parent. She was his partner. Besides, Orson knew the real world much better than either of them did. Events of the past standard year already crystallizing as memories, Lyra began to drift to sleep with Jin's warm breath on her cheek. And she thought, if Coruscant was so changed, then perhaps Galen was going to need Orson's help more than ever. Chapter 7. Enthralled to Grand Ideas.
Did we actually spend the whole of the past year halfway across the galaxy?
Galen asked.
Well, there's that beard of yours, Lyra said. So we must have been somewhere.
Galen stroked the whiskers Lyra had left behind, after trimming and styling the beard to complement his pronounced cheekbones and strong jaw. The two of them were collapsed into cushioned armchairs in the main room of their apartment on the grounds of the Institute of Applied Science, which rose from the heart of one of Central Coruscant's finest precincts. Galen had Jin propped on his left thigh,
and now he set her gently down on the floor, where she immediately began to work on her crawl.
"Galen, are you sure that's okay?"
He bent down to extend an arm and run his forefinger across the polylaminate flooring.
"Clean enough," he said, showing her his fingertip. "Besides, we may as well let her get familiar with the territory."
Lyra smiled as she watched Jin scurry, then paused to hook a leg under her body and lift herself slightly.
"She'll be walking before we know it,
and she's going to be a lot to keep up with." When Galen didn't respond, she glanced up at him to find him distracted, completely absent. Watching Jin, his look was at once joyous and anxious, and his thoughts were easy to decode.
"Galen, I'm sorry about the way things worked out. Or didn't."
Her tone brought him back to the moment, and he exhaled slowly.
"We were so close to achieving something monumental on Vault." He gave his head a long, mournful shake. "Every time I think about Nerbu and the others, what they might be going through..."
"Don't dwell on it, Galen. There's nothing we could have done to prevent what happened."
She sighed with purpose.
"I understand, though. Not a day goes by."
She let her words trail off, stood and crossed the room so that she could sit beside him. Jin's interest riveted on a piece of something she found on the floor that Lyra hoped wouldn't end up in her mouth.
"Something will turn up."
He showed her a rueful smile.
"I'd like to think so, but I've put us in a fix. Zerpan isn't likely to risk bringing me back into the fold right now. And let's face it, without a research position, I'm fairly useless."
"You're not useless, Galen. And I'm not exactly incapable of working."
"I know that," he said. "But I feel like I need to make it up to you and Jin."
"Make what up to us? You better not be blaming yourself for getting thrown into prison."
"I was the one who pushed for accepting Zerpan's offer. You at least had sense enough to try to talk me out of it."
Lyra turned his face toward hers.
"We went into it together, Galen. Now we just need to find a way forward. Together."
His eyes brightened somewhat.
"I do have an idea."
"Really?"
she said.
"I'm going to meet with Orson."
Her smile straightened.
"Orson? Why?"
"Thanks to him, the three of us are safely back on Coruscant."
Galen nodded in Jin's direction.
"We owe him."
Lyra took her lower lip between her teeth.
"To a degree, I guess. But despite the role Orson played, it was the Republic that rescued us."
"Okay. Then we owe a debt to the Republic."
Lyra searched his face for clues as to what he had in mind.
"I just think you need to be careful around Orson.
He still calls himself an engineer, but he's a soldier through and through." Galen nodded in agreement.
"You don't have to worry about my asking him for a job."
"Then what could you possibly have to talk to him about?"
"I'm going to repay our debt by rescuing him."
The scanner that monitored the main entry of the military detention center on Coruscant accessed the coded information contained in the insignia squares affixed to the left breast of Krennic's tunic. And with a chirp of approval, the thick door pocketed itself into the partition, allowing him to pass. Two clone troopers stationed inside led him through another door and into the mouth of a brightly lit corridor that sloped toward the turbolift bays that provided passage to the bowels of the building. Krennic knew because he had supervised the team that had remodeled the place. He had been back on Coruscant for a standard month, meeting with scientists on the Institute of Applied Science campus and attending strategic planning briefings, after the most recent of which he had received a message from Masamida saying that they needed to chat. Apprised of Galen's rescue, the Shagrian was probably eager to know when Galen could commence research on the battle station weapon, but in fact, Krennic wasn't sure himself. During their journey to the core, and in the time since, he had been careful not to ask Galen directly to participate in the special weapons group, nor had he mentioned anything about the battle station project itself. What Amida and the others didn't understand about Galen Erso was that direct approaches seldom worked. Only when Galen was halfway toward persuading himself to do something could he be coaxed the rest of the way. Galen would need to be convinced that it was his destiny to contribute to the battle station, and Krennic was determined to see to it that he didn't miss his calling. He hoped he had planted the seeds, and that chaotic Coruscant would provide the water and nourishment. Until such time, Krennic understood that he had to continue demonstrating his usefulness to Amida and Supreme Chancellor Palpatine. Galen's long captivity on Vault had furnished him with an idea for doing just that, which was why he had come to the detention center to speak with the Geonosian Archduke, Poggle the Lesser. The insectoid alien was waiting behind the ray shield entrance to a windowless and featureless interview room. He had evaded capture during the first Battle of Geonosis, only to be taken into custody after the second and brought to Coruscant by the Jedi for interrogation. "I want all surveillance suspended while I'm in there with him," Krennic told the clone troopers at the entrance to the interview room.
"Do you want to keep the ray shield active?"
one of them asked. Krennic shook his head.
"Lower it."
The trooper nodded curtly.
"As you wish, Lieutenant Commander."
Poggle was of average height for a Geonosian, with the skull of a long-snouted hominid. His eyes were thick-lidded and unreadable, and from the underside of his muzzle dangled a meter-long organ that was frequently mistaken for a tongue. Insectoid wings sprouted from the bony shoulder blades of a chitinous body that was near impervious to radiation. His two legs were reversed articulated, and his clawed hands were equipped with dexterous digits. Since the inception of the Strategic Advisory Cell, Krennic had immersed himself in studying the Geonosian society and learning the basics of the language. Many of the clicks and whistles and glottal stops still eluded him, but he was proficient enough in conversation to proffer a formal greeting that took Poggle by surprise.
"If you are to converse intelligently in Geonosian,"
Poggle said in basic through a translator device,
"you will need to focus on lengthening the syllables that make up our words. I had no trouble grasping what you were trying to say, but what you actually said was closer to, 'I greet the knees of your hive and extend my best choices for your willingness.'"
Krennic nodded.
"I will strive to improve."
Poggle continued to scrutinize him.
"I appreciate the effort nonetheless."
Krennic lowered himself into a simple chair and folded his hands atop the table that separated him from the Archduke.
"I am Lieutenant Commander Orson Krennic of the Republic Corps of Engineers."
"An engineer, not a soldier, or an intelligence analyst?"
"No, Archduke. My business, much like yours, is design and construction."
"Then I am curious as to why an engineer would desire to learn our tongue."
"Primarily because I've long been fascinated by your society. And for some time, I've wanted to congratulate you for introducing autonomous thinking to the battle droids. Central control computers were certainly an outgrowth of the hierarchical structure of Nymoidian society. And we all saw what happened at the Battle of Naboo. The separatist droid army has come a long way since, and I don't think the Geonosians are given enough credit for that. Even the fact that you are incarcerated here tells me that you are underappreciated by the separatist leadership, or they wouldn't have allowed you to fall into Republic hands."
"It's true that Geonosis should have been more heavily defended."
I'm certain you had all sorts of unique weapons planned to pad the Separatist arsenal.
Also true.
Krennic leaned forward and lowered his voice in conspiracy.
What I'm most interested in is the deep space mobile battle station.
Poggle's wattles twitched slightly as he regarded Krennic.
I know of no mobile battle station.
Krennic sat back, nodding.
I can appreciate why you'd say that. The one I'm referring to is the size and shape of a small moon.
He waited, then broke the silence by adding,
You're asking yourself, did I or did I not purge all the data on the computers in the Stahlgassen war room? And the answer is yes, you did. We couldn't get a thing out of the system.
He smiled faintly.
But just the same, we have learned a great deal about the battle station.
Poggle's reddish skin darkened.
There is no battle station.
Well, not yet there isn't. I have to ask, though. Was the station yet another example of Geonosian genius? Or did Count Dooku, or your confederate in this facility, Wat Tambor, provide you with the original design?
Krennic held up his hands before Poggle could reply.
Don't get me wrong. The schematic for the battle station has your flair all over it. The architecture, the superstructure, the parabolic focusing dish.
He waited. Still, doesn't ring a bell?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, perhaps it's the conditions in this deplorable place, Krennic said, gesturing broadly. The lack of fresh air and sunlight conspire to scramble one's recollections. Months of solitary confinement begin to work on the brain, and after a while you can no longer discern your memories from your hallucinations. Any sense of how far along Dooku is on building the installation?
Poggle started to say something but thought better of it.
Archduke, let's put our cards on the table. I know you've been over this time and again with Republic intelligence interrogators, and I've listened to every word of the recordings.
Poggle looked dubious.
And you claim to be an engineer.
That's true, though I admit to being one of high rank and influence. So as one engineer to another, can't you at least abandon the charade and give me some hint as to where the battle station is being built?
What good would be served by my talking about something of which I have no knowledge?
Krennic exhaled with purpose.
All right, then let's talk about something even more pressing, and that is the members of your hive. You know, another thing most beings fail to realize about the Geonosians is that it's in your nature to be industrious. When Bactoid Armor Workshop first approached you about designing droid factories for the Trade Federation, how could you turn that down? A way to keep all your drones and soldiers busy and content? Because the two go hand in hand, don't they? Projects and a sense of fulfillment. Anyone with even a passing familiarity with the history of your species knows what happens when there aren't tasks enough to keep everyone occupied. Hives attack hives. Hundreds of thousands die needlessly. Your vaunted arenas run thick with blood as drones try desperately to improve their status. The cemetery pits overflow with rotting corpses. The rampant agonism prevents your queens from reaching maturity. Surely you, of all Geonosians, will acknowledge that much, having risen from drone to archduke. And that's what has me worrying about Geonosis in your absence. How quickly will the descent into barbarity occur? Which soldier or drone will rise up to usurp your throne? How soon will your soldiers fly off to found a new colony? Who will see to it that the temperature in the Hive Queen's chamber remains constant?
You have a solution, Engineer.
I do indeed.
Krennic said.
And it has everything to do with the battle station you claim not to remember designing, despite what you've already supplied to our intelligence officers.
Let's, for the sake of argument, say that you only threw in with Count Dooku to keep your citizens content and well-fed. That you have no real issues with the Republic.
Let's say.
And let's further say that the Republic agrees that a productive Geonosian is a happy Geonosian.
Why would a Republic care?
Krennic leaned forward once more to lock gazes with Poggle. Because we want you to build the battle station for us. The pleasure Krennic took in how well he had played the Geonosian Archduke was eclipsed by Galen Erso's request to meet privately with him. Certainly to solicit Krennic's support in landing a position with the Republic military. It didn't matter to Krennic whether the request was motivated by a sense of gratitude for having been rescued from imprisonment or because Galen had finally come to grips with the fact that his options for employment in any scientific endeavor were few and far between. With Archduke Poggle on board and Galen about to enlist in the cause, how could Mas Amida and Supreme Chancellor Palpatine fail to be moved by Krennic's ability to take charge and follow through? The wings of the amphitheater were waiting. He had already decided on the course he would take with Galen, first by declining to intercede in Galen's affairs, not out of any lack of charity or animosity, but because he didn't want to be held accountable for Galen's defying his principles, for altering his stance regarding the war. He would, though, allow Galen to argue the point and gradually accede to his request for a position. Krennic imagined marching Galen directly over to the strategic planning amphitheater to have him swear to a security oath in the presence of Amida and some of the others, but he knew it wouldn't unfold in that way. Galen would first need to be brought into one of the ancillary battle station programs, defensive shield technology, say, or perhaps hyperdrive research, before becoming a part of the special weapons group. But all in good time. Krennic had asked Galen to come to his office in the Corps of Engineers headquarters, an office he himself hadn't visited in standard months, and was waiting behind his desk when Galen was shown in, the scientist heavier by a couple of kilos, and his beard trimmed to a presentable length. Krennic stood, extended his hand, and motioned Galen into a chair.
"How good to see you looking healthy and fit again! How are Lyra and, the child?"
"Jin," Galen provided. "Have all of you adjusted to being back in the Corps?" Galen frowned. "It hasn't been easy, especially being idle."
Krennic adopted a sympathetic expression.
"It's difficult to think of you without a project, a team of fellow researchers, a facility in which to work your magic. That's precisely why I'm here, Orson. And I hope you'll be open-minded about what I'm about to propose."
Krennic lifted a brow in surprise.
"Propose?"
Galen drew a data pad from his pocket and activated it. Instantly, the hollow image of an installation of some sort resolved in the air above the desk. Krennic regarded the 3D miniature in bafflement.
"What exactly am I looking at?"
"Our project," Galen said.
Krennic blinked.
"Our project? It's a rough design for a new energy facility,"
Galen went on.
"Far superior to anything Zerpan Industries has ever built. Some of what you see will have to be reworked, as Zerpan has proprietary rights, and of course I'll need to wait until the terms of my non-compete contract expire. But in the meantime, we can get started on assembling a team of the best and brightest and going after funding."
Krennic watched the hollow image revolve, feeling as if his head were doing the same.
"Funding? I'm certain you have access to wealthy beings from all sectors, Galen said. I suppose we could even approach the Republic if it hasn't allocated everything to the war effort. The point is that in the end, once everyone comes to appreciate the full potential of the energy we'll be able to generate, harvest, and provide, we'll be in a position to dictate terms and amass whatever funds we need.
Krennic realized that his mouth was hanging open and closed it.
Galen, are you actually proposing that we go into business together?
Galen smiled.
I know I'm asking a lot, as it would mean you're having to leave the Corps of Engineers, but we'd be embarking on something so, so unprecedented that I'm certain you'll never have cause to look back.
Krennic was speechless.
For a brief moment, he glimpsed a new destiny opening before his eyes, a window into a future he had never imagined for himself, a path to an entirely different life.
And yet, just as quickly as the window opened, it closed, slammed shut, as much by long years of training as by a feeling of trepidation.
Galen, you can't be serious, he said at last. Clearly you don't understand my position. But I am serious, Galen cut in. And I do understand your position. I just think you deserve more than this,
he added, motioning in a way that took in the Corps of Engineers headquarters. Krennic swallowed to suppress a sudden defensiveness, a raw desire to tell Galen Erso that this was all a sham. To load that datapad of Erso's with a schematic of the battle station and show him what he was really in charge of. Instead, he said,
I'm flattered and I'm honored, but I'm afraid that my commitment to the Republic comes first and foremost, especially at this time when the galaxy is divided against itself.
Galen's face fell, but he nodded in understanding.
I wish there was some way to convince you that there are other ways to contribute to peace.
Krennic fixed him in his sights.
As I wish I could convince you, he said with finality.
Staring out the window at the comings and goings of beings on the Institute campus, Galen asked himself how he could have felt freer in a prison cell than he did in his own apartment. In his mind's eye, he could still take in the view from the barred cell window, the one that it practically required the talents of a gymnast to behold. The fat flakes of snow falling on the tundra, sky kings performing lazy spirals overhead, the flickering lights of the city, winter's rippling, wavering curtains of polar light. And now, Coruscant, and a discontent he had never known. An inability to find refuge even in his thoughts, to find what one of his mentors had called the still point in the turning world. Weeks had passed since Orson's rejection of his proposal, but Galen still wasn't over it. In retrospect, he realized that he had been grasping at straws. Determined to find a swift and easy escape from the quagmire in which he found himself, but how could he have been so audacious as to ask Orson to abandon the career he had pursued since his earliest days in the Futures program? Galen abhorred his commitment to the Republic military, but Orson plainly had no interest in being rescued. He turned from the window and moved into the apartment's main room, careful not to tread on any of Jin's toys. With his mind busy in the most useless ways, and the apartment suddenly crowded with clothes and stuffed animals, mobiles and swing sets, almost all of it donated by friends whose children had outgrown those things, he had become compulsive about trying to impose some sense of order, but there simply wasn't enough space. So he had turned to his own possessions, his notes and datacrons and collections of sample rocks and crystals, and had experimented with arranging everything by category, the datacrons by order of importance, the crystals by size, then by color, all in an effort to keep from confronting the fact that he couldn't think. He couldn't concentrate. Instead, his thoughts churned, as Lyra used to accuse his feet of doing on hikes through rugged terrain. He gazed around in near despair. Where he had never had an issue with so-called free time, he was suddenly lost without his research, torn between uncompromising tenderness for Lyra and Jin, and a sense of burden in being able to provide a flawless future for them. The vault he missed no longer existed, nor did the Coruscant he and Lyra had left more than a standard year earlier. Despite the changes war had brought to the core, it might still be possible for them to ride out the conflict here. Even if it meant avoiding HoloNet news reports and steering clear of conversations about war and politics. Surely they could manage that much. Perhaps the war would end as abruptly as it had begun, and life would return to normal, or at least to what had been considered normal beforehand. There had been no word from Zerpan. Orson had affirmed that, what with charges of espionage still hanging in the air, the company was reluctant to contact him. Like Lyra, Orson maintained that an opportunity would eventually present itself, but Galen, normally patient, felt compelled to take charge. The place to begin, he had decided, was with his friends and colleagues at the Institute, some of whom he had known since his years in the Futures program. Many had fled for their home worlds when war had broken out, but just as many had remained on Coruscant. Only one, however, had been willing to make time to meet with him, the rest quick to furnish excuses that struck him as more equivocal than clear. Dressed in a suit 2 standard years old and already out of fashion, he left the apartment for a lunch appointment with Professor Riva Demain in the solarium of the Institute's astrophysics building. Coruscant's scrubbed air had a vibrancy it lacked before the war. From the tops of the tallest cloud cutters to the lowest of the central district's levels, everyone seemed to be actively participating in the defense of the Republic. News reports blared from screens once reserved for advertisements and entertainment. The tiers of traffic lanes were crowded and frenzied. Gargantuan starships landed and launched from the spaceports, the heat from their drives rippling the atmosphere, and military personnel were omnipresent, from uniformed officers of all species to squads of white-armored clone troopers. The astrophysics building, too, buzzed with activity. Visitors were required to check in at security booths and were sometimes shadowed by small repulsor lift cam droids. Cliques of multi-species researchers and professors hurried about, conversing in hushed tones or finishing one another's sentences with rushed enthusiasm. Other Institute denizens seemed completely preoccupied, lost in their own worlds, tapping or speaking notes into data pads as they maneuvered through the bustling corridors, narrowly avoiding collisions with others doing the same. Galen took note that many levels of the building were now restricted to faculty members and staff, with soldiers posted at every egress. He rode a turbo lift to the solarium and spied Riva seated at a square table by the west-facing windows. The Myrialan's skin was a powdery green, her striking face tattooed in vertical bands of dark diamonds. Her full lips were pigmented in iridescent blue scales. She wore a scarlet robe that reached the floor, and a cowl covered most of her graying hair. His former mentor stood as he approached and embraced him.
"Galen, it's wonderful to have you back on Coruscant. I almost didn't recognize you behind the beard."
He stroked his whiskers as he seated himself.
"It's probably time to get rid of it. It suits you."
She gestured toward the nourishment synthesizers.
"What can I get you?"
He shook his head.
"I normally skip lunch."
Riva motioned to her plate of food.
"You don't mind?" "Of course not. Good appetite." "How is Lyra, Galen?"
"Good. Adapting. To being a mother, I mean."
"Ah, yes, the baby."
"Jin."
She blew out her breath.
How could I forget? I was there when the two of you chose the name. I've too much on my mind lately.
Galen's eyes roamed the sunlit room.
This place has become a hive. It's like this all over. The Institute is conscripting candidates from university programs even before they graduate. So many people working on so many projects. Are you still involved in energy generation and enhancement?
No longer.
Galen let his surprise show.
But that was always your passion, Reva. I was following your research every chance I got. You seem to be on the threshold of a major advance.
She exhaled in a fatigued way and pushed her plate aside.
Things change. So I keep hearing. What are you involved with now?
She glanced around before answering.
Defensive shield generation.
I really can't say a lot about it.
A knowing smile lightened the moment.
But I'm sure we'll be able to catch up after the next briefing.
Galen frowned in ignorance.
What briefing?
She paused for a moment to take his measure.
You're not... You haven't joined the defense project?
He spread his hands in bafflement.
You haven't signed the official secrets oath?
She pressed.
I've never even heard of an official secrets oath.
Her eyes shifted.
I'm sorry, Galen. I'd assume that... Well, never mind. You're still with Zerpan, then.
I honestly don't know. The regime change on Vault apparently left a bad taste in their mouth.
All the more reason for you to join us.
Join you in what, exactly?
Reva, I can't get a straight answer from anyone about what's going on. What's become of this place? All these spying eyes and security posts... It feels less like a place for science than a military base.
Reva firmed her shimmering lips.
You've been away, Galen. The war has altered everything, not only for those directly involved in the conflict, but also for many of us here on Coruscant. Count Dooku shook us awake to a harsh reality, and most of us have traded theory for practicality. Even so, unlimited funding has been wonderful for research.
Galen smirked.
Wars have always been good for innovation. But what's become of our dream of providing renewable energy to shore up microeconomies on developing worlds, to allow them to participate in power production, rather than be held hostage to the consortiums?
In due time, we'll return to that,
Reva said.
And we'll be able to accomplish much more than we ever could before.
Galen was crestfallen.
What's it like? Working for the military.
Reva's eyes darted again.
My direct contact with them is somewhat limited. I spend my days conferring with colleagues and machines. We calculate, we experiment, we transmit our research.
These shield generators, are they designed for cities as defensive umbrellas?
Reva shook her head.
They're designed for capital ships.
Galen stared at her.
I don't understand. Rothana's ships are capable of withstanding most of what the Separatists can deliver in the way of laser or projectile fire. Our team is working on protecting something larger, with wider, impregnable coverage.
Larger than a Venator-class Star Destroyer. Is this to parry some new weapons platform Dooku has in the works?
So it would seem.
Considering it, Galen prized a marker from his pocket and started to sketch his thoughts onto a napkin.
In the short run, you could consider shunting a shield's absorbed energy into a heat sink, then employ neutrino radiators to return energy to the generators and projectors themselves. It's similar to what we've been doing with lasing mediums and crystals. Of course, you need to be careful about overpumping.
He continued to sketch, maybe multiple shield generators distributed evenly across an entire hull to enhance coverage. Reva slid the napkin across the table to regard it.
Interesting.
But just thinking out loud, Galen said in dismissal. But this sort of research isn't normally done on Coruscant.
Our ideas are going to be put to the test in a new facility.
Am I allowed to know where?
I don't even know where it is.
Official secrets. He sat back, folding his arms across his chest. It's come to that, has it? By way of answer, she said,
all of us need to position ourselves for the future, Galen.
And just as quickly she changed the subject.
But listen, a group of us from the old days are having a reunion in a few weeks. Why don't you join us? Bring Lyra, bring the baby if you want. I'm certain that a lot of your former schoolmates would love to see you.
Before everyone ships out for parts unknown, you mean? Tongue in her cheek, she nodded.
That's a distinct possibility.
Chapter 8. Public Displays of Affectation. Krennic and Vice Chancellor Masamita left the Strategic Planning Amphitheater together, using a doorway reserved for the highest-level dignitaries. A pair of red-robed guards followed, but slowed their pace to drop back as the two began to converse.
Who authorized you to launch an attack on Vault?
Amita said with a snarl of exasperation. He had the tall, figure-headed staff gripped in his right hand and was sporting a shimmer silk cummerbund and an overcloak with padded shoulders, as if his upper torso weren't already wide enough.
It was a military decision.
I ask again, on whose authority?
Krennic looked at him out of the corner of his eye.
You said you didn't want to know any details. Have you changed your mind?
I don't want to know. And yet, intelligence reaches me, and I'm obliged to become involved.
Amita shot him a look.
Who?
The admiral in command of that sector. The attack was part of the deal we made with Zerpan, and also a means of safeguarding anything Galen Erso may have revealed to Vault's separatist regime regarding the disposition of Republic warships in that sector.
Amita ridiculed the idea with a reverberating grunt.
Erso wasn't in possession of any intelligence to that effect.
Just to be sure, then.
As it happens, the return of Vault to the Republic has worked in our favor.
Amita's gruff voice lost some of its edge.
I'm told that the world can be used as a staging area for offensives into nearby systems. But let me caution you about the need to respect the chain of command, Lieutenant Commander. Otherwise, you risk jeopardizing your position in the cell.
Krennic disregarded the council. I must be allowed to do my job, Vice-Chancellor.
Since when does meeting with the Geonosian Archduke fall under your bailiwick?
Krennic wasn't surprised to learn that Amita knew of the visit. The ongoing discussion about the need for a sentient workforce on the battle station gave me an idea, and I chose to follow up on it. Amita looked over at him.
Poggle has agreed to provide his drones?
Krennic nodded once. He'll make the announcement part of his homecoming. The Shagrian's grunt signaled endorsement.
Very clever.
They walked in silence for a few moments before Amita added,
I have briefed the Supreme Chancellor about the rescue of Galen Erso.
Krennic suppressed a smile of satisfaction. I considered using Lockdurd and Nouveau Vindi in the swap, but I wasn't certain you would sanction their release from confinement. Hence the two more Syrians, who no longer pose a threat to the Grand Army clones, by the way. Amita's free hand stroked the Lethorn on that side.
I have been looking into Dr. Erso's research. As you say, he may prove to be of great value to the project.
I'm glad you agree.
So why hasn't he been recruited? Why the delay?
He's still weighing his options. I suggest we give him more time.
Time? Are you aware of our recent defeat at Ryloth?
I just heard.
And our losses at Bothawe?
Most unfortunate.
Then I'm sure you'll agree that time is growing short. How can we force his hand?
We can't. He's rejected previous offers from the military. The fact that he chose prison over freedom shows that he can't be coerced. He doesn't approve of bureaucracy and prefers to control as much of his research as possible.
He was a Zerpan employee,
Amita pointed out. Only because Zerpan promised to leave him alone.
I prefer people without principles,
Amita said.
Is it Zerpan's wish to have him back?
Yes, but we've persuaded them not to tender any offers. Dr. Erso was part of the price Zerpan paid for the return of the vault facility. Amita scowled.
Is there no one who can help us position him? His wife, perhaps?
Krennic shook his head. Cut from the same cloth, I'm afraid.
She is not a scientist. Just what is she to him? A minder?
A listener. A translator of sorts. Often in charge of transcribing and organizing his notes. Amita fairly growled.
Dr. Erso was your idea. Months have elapsed, and he continues to elude you. Without the weapon itself, our project is nothing more than a very costly, artificial planetoid.
Krennic mulled it over. Vice Chancellor, I imagine that fishing is a very popular pastime on your homeworld.
Champala seas are not what they once were, but yes, of course,
Amita said, clearly wondering where Krennic was going. Then you understand the need for a proper lure, the proper bait, even the proper device required to land a catch. Amita exhaled through his nose.
To extend your analogy, Dr. Erso may be one of those rare creatures who is not easily attracted to even the most colorful lure or the tastiest bait.
In his own waters, perhaps. But he's far from those, and swimming directly toward our net. Krennic paused, then added, Galen Erso is destined to join the project. He just doesn't know it yet.
Krennic had had no plans to attend the Futures Program reunion until he learned that Galen would be attending. The affair was hosted by a wealthy graduate who had served two terms in the Senate and whose apartment suite in 500 Republica was as lavish as any that could be found in Coruscant's most prestigious building. Many of those present were researchers and scientists involved with various aspects of the battle station project. The drives, shield and tractor beam technology, hypermatter power plant, without a full understanding of what they were working on. As a way of implementing the need-to-know tactics adopted by the cell, research was scattered among thousands of facilities on hundreds of worlds, with all interdisciplinary communication monitored and controlled. An entire branch of Republic security had been created merely to run constant surveillance on key personnel, eavesdrop on off-hours conversations, and capture images for scrutiny and analysis. Krennic found a vantage point in the room and looked around. With so much drinking going on, he thought one could almost forget that the Republic was at war. He wasn't the only one in uniform, as the Futures Program had fed as many graduates into the military as it had academia, the arts, and government service. But few of the officers were risk-takers like himself. They were analysts and tacticians, lost in their data banks of information and safe in their hardened headquarters on Coruscant. Most would have remembered him as the one who was always speaking out of turn and yet managed to graduate with high honors. Abandoning his position, he began to circulate among them,
keeping a watchful eye on Galen while affording him ample space to interact with friends and colleagues he hadn't seen in years, many of whom regarded Galen as something of a superstar in scientific circles, a master of the invisible connections between things. Krennic had originally dismissed Galen as the kind of retiring kid who typically would have been bullied or harassed mercilessly. Little by little, however, he came to appreciate Galen, not only for his intellectual superiority, but also for his unique spirit. When called on by a professor, Galen would provide an answer without lifting his eyes from his desk, as if he were busy solving some other problem at the same time, or finishing one of his outlandish sketches with either hand. He had no interest in sports, drinking, flirting, or conquests. He saw the world as if with extrasensory eyes and ears, and had an ability to grasp heady concepts almost instinctively, concepts Krennic sometimes struggled to comprehend. He became fascinated by the prodigy from Grange, and on a couple of occasions had been Galen's protector in fights or brawls. Adept at reading people, Krennic had made the most of being surrounded by geniuses, and had used his stint in the Futures program to hone his skills. He devoted himself to learning how to work with academics and scientists, how to put them on the same path and organize them into productive teams. His leadership became as important to a project as their contributions, and he built a reputation as someone who could be the interface between the ones with power and financing, and the ones who could calculate and construct and make dreams come true. When it had come time for choosing someone from the Corps of Engineers to head up the Special Weapons Group, the cell had had to look no further than Orson Krennic. Continuing his perambulation, he saw Lyra Urso speaking with Galen's close friend, Riva Demain, whom Krennic had drafted into the shield generator program. Having left year-old Jin with a nanny, Lyra was on her own for a change, and a veritable cynosure in a room full of mostly frumpy researchers. When Krennic imagined her, he saw her in rugged boots and hiking shorts and carrying an unwieldy pack on her back. Seeing her now in a fashionable skirt and high heels was something of a revelation. Krennic recalled running into Galen shortly after his return from Espinar several years earlier, and being entertained by the crystallographer's bright-eyed confession that he had fallen in love. Galen, who would scarcely raise his eyes when a pretty woman entered a room, in love? It had to be a joke. The thought of Galen's genius being undermined by some grasping creature drove him to distraction. But Krennic couldn't wait to meet the mysterious Lyra, the woman whose mere touch enchanted Galen. And when he did, he understood what Galen had found in her. His opposite. Each of them drawn to the other's exotic qualities. Still, he hadn't expected the love affair to last more than a couple of months, and was shocked when they wed. All these years later, Krennic still wasn't used to the two of them. Once he was instrumental in persuading Galen to accept his destiny by joining the project, was Lyra going to be a problem? Thank the stars that child had come along to keep her occupied and out of his way. He stopped to listen in on a huddle of people speaking about Galen, and every so often glancing at him. He edged closer to hear a computer engineer named Dagio Belkos inaccurately recounting the details of Galen's imprisonment on Vault. An Iktachi of medium height, with a battering ram forehead and a pair of polished downturned horns, Belkos was a member of Dr. Gubacker's artificial intelligence team, designing enhanced overseer droids to supervise the battle station labor force. The near-human's big right hand held a drink, and he was ranting that the Republic should simply bomb the separatist capital world of Raxus out of existence, and that people like Galen Erso were an insult to the goal of victory. Pushing his way through the huddle, Belkos staggered up to Galen, who was a centimeter or so taller than Degio, but lighter by several kilos.
"Here he is,"
the Iktochi began in a loud slur.
"The prodigal Kaiba specialist who refuses to join the cause."
He spread his fleshy hands.
"Perhaps he thinks he is too intelligent to work with the rest of us. He'd rather work on a separatist world than serve the Republic."
Even caught by surprise, Galen appeared unperturbed by the allegation.
"You're drunk, Degio," he said, "which comes as no surprise. What does is the fact that you're so obviously deluded."
Galen's calm only made Degio angrier.
"The always elusive Erso. I'd like to hear you deny the charges of treason publicly."
Galen shut his eyes for a moment. "I've nothing to deny, and nothing more to say to you."
Krennic spotted Lyra winding through the onlookers to reach Galen as he turned to leave. At the same time, Riva Demain saw the situation beginning to escalate and attempted to mediate by stepping between Galen and Degio and stretching out her arms.
"Gentlemen, please," she said. "This is not an occasion for recriminations."
With a deft sidestep, Degio outmaneuvered her, took Galen by the shoulder, and spun him around.
"Just what intelligence did you share with them while you were allegedly in custody?"
Galen's face took on sudden color.
"I told them what everyone here already knows. That Degio Belkoz is a second-rate slicer who for years has taken credit for coding written by far more gifted beings."
Krennic moved quickly, placing himself just behind the Iktochi's left shoulder as Degio hurled the icy drink directly into Galen's face. Krennic had already discerned that the drink was a diversion and that Degio's free hand was cocked and ready to launch. When Galen fell back a step, the Iktochi fired off a powerful jab aimed at the side of Galen's jaw. Galen, though, was a step ahead of him. Slipping to one side, he raised his arm, assuring that Degio's punch would deflect off his forearm. Then, in a move that caught even Krennic off guard, Galen came in under Degio's extended arm with a powerful cross that connected solidly with the Iktochi's cheekbone and sent him stumbling back, confused and bleeding. A few of Degio's friends had the wisdom to hold him back, as Lyra was suddenly at her husband's side, ready to plant a heel directly into the Itachi's forehead.
"Just like old times," Krennic said, stepping carefully to Galen's other side.
"Except it seems I no longer have to fight your battles."
Galen wiped the drink from his face and nursed his fist.
"You never did."
In the ensuing confusion, the room divided into two camps. Adjusting her stance, Lyra slipped her arm through Galen's and began leading him toward the door. Krennic watched them go. Galen had been publicly accused of being a traitor, and now humiliated because of his reluctance to serve the Republic. Krennic couldn't have orchestrated it any better had he tried. Chapter 9. Angry Red Planet. It was the rainy season on that part of Geonosis. The vast, normally red desert plain had been transformed into a foul-smelling, acidic lake that had attracted migratory beasts from throughout the region. And the cluster of dripstone spires that made up the Stalgasan Hive rose like islands in the mist. The vaguely circular Petronaki Arena, a natural butte that had been decapitated and hollowed, hosted a shallow lake of its own, composed of the spilled blood of several thousand drones who had died after 3 days of gladiatorial games and had yet to soak fully into the gritty sand. Seated among Geonosian aristocrats who had paid fortunes to revel in being spattered by airborne gore,
Krennic shuddered at the thought of having to spend what might be a decade on and above the irradiated world. An astringent smell assaulted his nostrils, possibly the loosed pheromones that were whipping the assembled crowd of 100,000 flightless drones and winged soldiers to a near frenzy. The reason for the celebration was twofold. It was both the eve of Mechjin and the long-overdue homecoming of the Hive's leader, Archduke Poggle the Lesser, whom Krennic had escorted home, traveling by Star Destroyer to the newly established Sentinel base that safeguarded Geonosis space before transferring to a smaller ship that had carried them the rest of the way. Now the Archduke occupied a shell-like podium that had risen from the bowels of the arena and was waiting for the place to settle down so that he could address the multitudes. Alongside and behind Krennic in the membrane-shaded visitors' boxes were a handful of Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's emissaries and cronies, including Sate Pistage, Ars Dangor, and Janus Grigetus. All, like Krennic, were attired in anti-rad hydration suits and transpirators, except for the Chancellor's bald-headed and ethereal administrative aide, Sly Moore, who wore an invaluable Umbaran shadow cloak that looked as if it had been spun from feathers. Krennic was grateful to see Poggle on the podium at last, certain that another hour of the Phantasmagoria would drive him mad.
How blessed I am by the Creator in being able to join you on an occasion of such spectacle and bravery.
The Archduke began.
How wonderful it feels to be returned to ever-dramatic Geonosis. Harsh, but ever-welcoming. Scoured by the rays of our crimson sun, and emboldened by them. Blessed to have this corner of space to ourselves, so that the Geonosian society has been able to take charge of its own evolution and fulfill its destiny.
Poggle had a new staff of office, a kind of crooked walking stick carved from the tusk of an indigenous carnivorous behemoth, which he lifted into the air to a deafening chorus of clicks and whistles from the crowd.
It is, in fact, by the good graces of the Republic, whose representatives are today our guests, that I am able to participate.
An angry buzzing rose from the cheap seats. Aure mounted Geonosian picadors armed with stun poles zapped a few audience members into silence before things could get out of control. But Ars Dangor had his doubts.
I fear we could become appetizers at the drop of a hat,
he said to Krennic through speakers built into the transpirators. As a show of faith, Krennic had ordered the ship's complement of clone troopers to remain aboard, but he was beginning to question his decision. He tried to imagine what it had been like when a couple of Jedi had nearly been butchered in the arena and certainly would have died had other Jedi and a regiment of Grand Army soldiers not arrived in the nick of time, seemingly out of nowhere and taking the galaxy by surprise. Might he be sitting in Count Dooku's seat just now? Poggle's knobby hands were making calming gestures.
Yes, yes, it cannot be denied that we have had our differences with the Republic. That two great battles have been fought on our hallowed grounds against the forces of the Republic. But let us pause for a moment to consider the circumstances that led to those conflicts. Some of you gathered here today are old enough to remember when Bactoid Arma Workshop came to Geonosis and struck a deal with us to build foundries and produce bat battle droids and other automata, for which we were handsomely rewarded. There, as ever, we were able to overcome our natural contempt for outsiders in order to fulfill what seemed a noble task. Sheltered in remote space, how could we have known that in fully devoting ourselves to that enterprise, for we would never do less, we were serving the interests of a trade cartel that would bring strife to the Outer Rim. Later too, when Count Dooku came to renew our contract with Bactoid, how could we have known that this human, a former Jedi Knight, had aligned himself with a confederacy of separatists? A confederacy determined not only to secede from the Republic, but also to cripple the economy of the galaxy by engaging in an all-out war. The Republic is not our enemy!
Wing flapping and whistling erupted from the upper caste galleries, and the suddenly stirred air wafted the odor of grilled arch grubs into Krennic's breath mask.
How fitting that on this day, celebrating the virtues of industry, I should be able to announce the next great undertaking of the Stalgassen Hive, and perhaps the greatest it has ever undertaken.
The arena fell eerily silent, tangibly expectant. Even the beasts, the chained reeks and acklays quieted. Poggle played to the moment, posing a question.
How many of you have gazed into the heavens at night and seen something new taking shape above our world? A crescent, a circle, a gleaming ring that is like the portal to another dimension. Many of you have grasped that our asteroids have been supplying the raw materials for the ring. As our dismantled and reassembled foundries have been furnishing the finished products. But how many of you are aware that the ring is an artifact of our hive? That the ring is in fact a Geonosian creation?
Krennic smiled to himself. Poggle was finally taking credit for it.
We have now been tasked to realize the dream that originated with our designers in constructing a mobile orb of such size that it will seem to some nothing less than a small moon. This will be the greatest enterprise in which the Hive has ever participated. Not merely because of the scale, but also because the work will necessitate that many of you executed from inside the orb itself, in space, from where you will be able to gaze down in wonder on our home world while you go happily about your assignments. Is this not reason for celebration of unprecedented magnitude?
He gave the crowd ample time to whoop it up, then simmer down.
I have saved the most important announcement for last,
he added in a serious tone.
We have a viable queen, which will shortly mean a doubling of our workforce and the subsequent doubling of our efforts. So let the games continue for another 3 days. Let blood be spilled and drones prove themselves worthy of escalation. and let us give good cheer to those representatives of the Republic who have helped bring about this miracle of service!
Krennic's stomach turned at the thought of having to sit through another 3 days of bloodletting. But a rush of smugness galvanized him.
"Nicer surroundings than for my last interrogation," Galen said, after he had taken a seat in the Adjutant General's office.
"I was assured that Republic Intelligence treated you very civilly,"
Wilhuff Tarkin said from his chair. There was a desk in the room, but Tarkin had motioned Galen to an armchair in a sitting area with a low table centered on an expensive carpet, adorned with the Republic symbol. Artwork and datacrons filled the hardwood shelves, and the large window looked out on the Senate dome.
"I'm referring to my interrogation on Vault," Galen clarified. "It was bitter cold and the roof leaked."
"You obviously enjoy a loftier administrative position than Chieftain Gropper does."
"Or did, depending on whether she survived the Republic attack."
Tarkin smiled thinly.
"I'm told that she did indeed survive. Perhaps she now occupies the very cell you did."
Galen's eyebrows went up in surprise.
"I'm glad to hear she's alive."
"You two became friendly?"
"You mean as interrogators and their captives sometimes do?"
"I'm simply curious."
Galen snorted.
"Simple curiosity doesn't go especially well with this room or your uniform, Commander."
Galen didn't know anything about Tarkin, other than that he had served in the Republic Navy before being appointed Adjutant General. A tall man, some 10 or 15 years older than Galen, he had sunken cheeks, a high brow, and a look of penetrating intelligence.
"Let's not get off on the wrong foot, Dr. Erso. This is an informal interview, not a cross-examination."
"Formal, informal, what's the difference anymore? Is there a particular cam you wish me to face?"
"You are under no obligation to answer my questions. As I told you, you're entitled to a lawyer."
"Perhaps we could begin by your answering one of mine."
Tarkin relaxed in his chair and crossed one knee over the other.
"I'm at your disposal."
"Why am I being prevented from leaving Coruscant? Zerpan's facility and vault is now back in operation, and I fully expect the company to rehire me."
Tarkin made his thin lips even thinner.
"The problem, as I understand it, is that Zerpan is still doing business with Worlds in danger of falling to the Separatists, and we can't risk your being involved in another incident."
"But Vault has returned to the Republic."
"For the moment. Vault lies in a very contested sector. It could change hands several times before this conflict ends, as has happened to many worlds. There is also, I'm afraid, the ongoing investigation into your loyalty to the Republic."
Galen made a fatigued sound.
"I'm certain you have access to my debriefings by Republic Intelligence and Compor."
"I've read them." "During those sessions, you avowed that you provided no information to Vault, and that you refused their offer to conduct research for the Separatists. You also stated that you have no interest in conducting research for the Republic."
"I am a scientist, not an effective."
"No one is asking you to fight on the front lines, Dr. Erso. We have the Grand Army and the Jedi Order for that. What the Republic needs is people willing to support the war effort in other ways."
"Again, I'm not interested in supporting the war in any capacity."
"You hail from a Republic member world that has been left devastated by the conflict. You were educated, at considerable expense, in an elite program founded by the Republic and at a succession of institutions thereafter."
"I don't recall being under any obligation to repay that debt."
"You're not. But let's be frank, Dr. Erso. You see how this looks. A brilliant researcher refusing to lift a finger to help his government.
There's a difference between objecting to the policies of the Republic and being a separatist sympathizer.
Granted. And yet you feel no allegiance to the Republic.
No allegiance to the Republic war machine. If there's a place for me in energy enrichment, I'll accept the opportunity without hesitation.